Welcome. It's time for Peer Pressure. Today's guest is Bettina Richards, who's the founder and owner of Thrill Jockey Records. They are celebrating their 20th anniversary this past year, and she lets us in on what it was like to start the label, as well as some of her favorite music. Thanks to Lita Martinez for editing the podcast and to Liz Berg for the other podcast duties that are involved. We are WFMU. Stay tuned. And my guest today is Bettina Richards of Thrill Jockey Records. Bettina, are you there? She's actually not there. She'll be ready in a little while. So what I'm going to do is start off with her first set. Bettina is a very busy woman. And Thrill Jockey is celebrating their 20th anniversary this year with shows from coast to coast. Some really great shows, which she'll be talking about in a little bit. But we're going to start with her picks. This is the first set of her picks, and she'll be in after a couple of songs. So we got some Liturgy, and they are on the Thrill Jockey label. And Liturgy were part of... I think that they didn't end up making the South by Southwest show. Never mind. But they are friends of WFMU for sure. So here's some Liturgy, and we'll be talking to Bettina in a little while. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, you're there. Good. Excellent. So my guest is Bettina Richards of Thrill Jockey Records. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You have a crazy schedule. And an awesome playlist so far.
Oh, cool. I'm glad you like it.
Yeah. And quickly, I want to congratulate you on the anniversary of your label.
Thank you. It's good to be 20.
Yes, absolutely. And you've got some really great stuff going on. You want to just talk about that a little bit?
Sure, yeah. We've got a bunch of shows around the country, but of most interest to your FMU listeners, we have shows coming up on Friday the 14th at Death by Audio, a venue that has been historically great to us, with White Hills and Guardian Alien and Man Forever, Dan Friel, Raiton, and a special guest. And then at Webster Hall, we have on the Saturday night, which is very early show, it starts at 5:30.
Yeah, I saw that listed, actually.
So,
yeah.
we have Tortoise, Future Islands, Matmos, Liturgy, D. Charles Spear and the Helix, and Wandering Amongst You, the fantastic Black Twig Pickers.
Yeah, who are the Black Twig Pickers?
The Black Twig Pickers are a bluegrass band from Virginia. I actually first met them through Jack Rose, and they really focus on a very specific regional kind of bluegrass. Their music is, they do a regular dance night. It's really pure stuff, and it's incredible to surround them and watch them do what they do. They do something that I'd only heard about called fiddlesticks, where the fiddler plays and then another person plays percussion on the fret of the fiddle while he's playing, and it's really something to behold. It's,
wow.
It requires no amplification, just gather around them and you'll want to dance.
And you said they're going to be in the crowd?
Yeah, in between the bands, and when the doors open, they'll just wander around, stand by people, and start playing.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think it's the best way to see them, you know, no separation, mm-hmm. Right in the middle. That's the way they do it all the time in Virginia, so.
Wow. Very interesting. Neat. So a couple of big shows here, and then you've got things going on coast to coast.
That's right, yeah. We have a big show in Baltimore, Portland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and London.
That's so super. And so it's been 20 years. So looking back, you know, did you think that you'd be having anything like this going on for that anniversary?
I mean, I certainly never thought about, oh, geez, what will I be doing in 20 years? I didn't think much beyond how am I going to get this HP Zinker record made at the time, because that was the first record we did.
Mm. You were probably working too hard to even think about the future.
Working hard, trying to figure out how to get it all done and not make huge mistakes. And I worked at the late, great Pier Platters at the time.
Yeah.
So it was just juggling, you know, covering my rent, getting to work on time, and making sure I did what I promised to HP Zinker and Gaunt and Freakwater and all the early records.
And when you went into doing the label, did you really decide to start a label, or was it more about like your first release and you just really wanted to put out their record?
No, I had worked at London Records and Atlantic Records just because I was, I still am a massive music fan and like a hopeless record buying addict, and I thought that would be a good way to advocate for stuff I like, and I found that the system was incompatible with how I think about musicians and music. So I wanted to start a label. I was really, took the model of Discord and Touch and Go, which were the profit share labels that I was, really aware of at the time. And I wanted to do that. That seemed and still seems to me like the only correct way of doing things is a true partnership with them. So.
And how are things in the, quote, digital age? How have you adapted?
I mean, certainly we tried to embrace the technology early. I think Warp was the first independent label I knew that had their own digital download store, and we followed them shortly behind, and we immediately put all our records up for stream, mostly because we believe that if people could only hear the music, they would like it and want to support the artists. So we try to embrace it. I think, having worked in a record store, having, my love for music come from many record store clerks who recommended things to me, I don't like what it does to, you know, all the hardworking people at record stores. It's really, really unfortunate in that regard. But, you know, I have to spend my time trying to adapt to what is and not what was. So that's what we focus on.
Right, exactly. And I do want to just emphasize what you said again. All of your releases are full-length streams on the website.
Yeah, there's a couple of exceptions where the artist wasn't comfortable with that. But that's, you know, and I respect them for that. So, but by and large, I think all but one or two artists, everything is streamed and has been for a long time. So you can go there and listen away.
Yeah, that's super. And speaking of listening, you did just DJ your first set in this program, starting with Liturgy.
Yeah, we started off with a few New Yorkers, Liturgy with the song Generation, and then Mutilation Rites with a song from their new one, Ancient Bloodbath, and we're really stoked at Thrill Jockey to be distributing Gilead Media now. Big fan of what Adam does at that label, and I saw Mutilation Rites at his festival, and really, they blew my mind, you know. Mm. And Liturgy, I think, has blown my mind since day one. They were referred to me through the Boredoms, if you can believe that. And, you know, they were amazing as a quartet, and they're fierce as a duo as well. It's really what Hunter and Bernard do with just the two of them is awesome to behold. So I'm stoked about what they're working on now for next year.
Nice.
And then we played Future Islands, Balance. Future Islands are from Baltimore, and it took me about 30 seconds of hearing one note of Future Islands to beg them to let me do their records. It's such happy, wonderful, delicious music to bathe yourself in.
Mm.
I like the contrast of playing like Future Islands in between Mutilation Rites and The Body.
Yeah.
That's how I listen to music. I think, you know, really different sounds bring out all the best in the opposites. So, yeah, then we went into The Body, Song of Saren, and again, they're a band whose records I seek out wherever I can, and seeing them live is something to behold as well.
They're, oh, yeah.
Them and Liturgies can really show you the power of two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you're a perfect DJ for WFMU. You know, I'm like, oh, this is fine. And the listeners are totally psyched about it. And Future Islands is going to be playing that Webster Hall show for you.
Future Islands and Liturgy, yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So we tried to, you know, keep it a lot different. D. Charles Spear and Liturgy, they all couldn't be more different, and that's the way we like it.
And so what are we going to go into next?
Next we're going to play a brand new thing from Dan Friel. Dan, probably a lot of listeners know him from Parts and Labor. He has been doing solo stuff for quite a while, but not released that much music. I think it's super heavy and dirty and makes me want to dance. And then we're going to go into somebody else that makes me want to dance, Matmos, and we're really excited to be able to work with them. It's Drew and Martin's 20th anniversary as a couple, so it just seemed so serendipitous that it all came together.
Oh,
and
nice.
The singer on that is also from Baltimore, Ed Schrader. And then we're going to go into White Hills, Radiate. I picked that because it's really, really one of the first tracks I heard from them, and you know, it kind of encapsulates so many things I love about them. They keep changing what they do, but it's a keeper, this one. And then we go into Eternal Tapestry. I think if people who love Eternal Tapestry, this will be a bit of a surprise for them. It's an Eternal Tapestry almost ballad, if you will. It's from their new record.
Wow.
They took a really different tact when they recorded this new record. Usually they do really extensive jams and edit stuff together. They like to plunge deep into the psych pool, but this was a song that they had written amongst others on the new record that they sort of decided to record as they had written it. And then we go into Arboretum, who this is a song from a tour CDR that they do that I think the movement of it and everything really captures the feeling of being on tour. So thought it was a good one.
Awesome. Well, you know, and I just your enthusiasm is just overflowing, and it's great to know that after 20 years you're not jaded in the least.
Oh my God, not at all. Having more fun now than ever. I think there's been something about just completely being comfortable where you are, figuring out some things, and really, really not caring what anybody else thinks. You know, we're responsible only to the musicians we work for, and we take that responsibility very seriously, but the rest of it is like, let's just do what we want and have a good time.
Oh, yeah, and I wanted to ask you, I had Mike Scheidt on a couple of weeks ago, and how did you get in touch with him?
You know, I am seriously like a super fan that cannot contain myself and a big geek, and I'm sure told him how awesome he was at a Yob show, and I know his booking agent, and when, you know, Yob had released a new record, I would send him ridiculous, useless emails like how great it was and how it was like blowing my mind. And so when Mike had recorded some stuff at home, him and Nathan said, oh, we should, you know, he wanted to do something a little bit different, and it is a big sort of risky step for him, so they wanted to go to a label that was totally different, and so they sent it to me, and I was thrilled. He's a really sweet guy, and I love the sort of 70s classic rock vibe of what he's doing solo, and I love that he takes the risk of going so far out of the Yob zone. You know, I think that's brave. And
yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess that the geekiness came out, and it was a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely has benefited me more than a few times. I think Oval, I worked with for many years, and still do, and I sent them a fan letter. So you never know.
Like, fan letters are so great.
Yeah.
You know,
now I guess I would send a fan email, but at the time I sent
right.
a fan letter.
Well, even a fan email, people don't send fan anythings enough. People just stand there with their cameras and, you know, record video and then say they have it. You know, that's very funny. So awesome. So we're going to go into the next set, and we'll be back in about 20 minutes after this. Here's some Dan Friel. My guest is Bettina Richards of Thrill Jockey Records. Stay tuned. And we have returned. My guest is Bettina Richards. Are you there?
Yep.
All righty. Fantastic set. Just coming out of that Arboretum. What was your first contact with them?
You know, a friend of mine was, they were on tour supporting Will Oldham, and they had a show that was kind of an addition to that tour. And a friend of mine was their tour manager, and she's like, oh, I'm at this little bar over here by your house, come over and say hey. So I went over to say hey to her, and fell in love with Arboretum.
It's always those the serendipitous things, the way they work like that.
Yeah,
that's cool. Hey, so
they didn't really have many records out, and I was the only person at the show.
Well, they were very lucky, weren't they?
It was. It was my own private entertainment.
And isn't that, though, like when you go to shows and it's really underattended, but it's a great show, it's like you feel great because you get this personal show, but you feel bad for the band?
Sure, yeah. You know, for our 10th anniversary, we did this documentary film with this New York filmmaker, Braden King, and we kind of asked all these people, what got you into music or what keeps you into music? And Chris Brokaw, a guitar player of Common, mm-hmm. having Pullman and released many solo records, he talked about at a time in his life when he was feeling pretty low and they were on tour, and they'd had a couple of poorly attended shows, and he played this show to basically two people. Mm. He had been thinking prior to the show, like, I don't know if I can keep doing this. And after the show, the two people came up and told him they had driven up from, I think the show was in Cleveland, I think he said they drove from, like, Texas or something ridiculous to see the band.
Wow.
And they were so appreciative that kind of, for him, he tells it much better than I am now. But basically, that cemented his affection for what he was doing and kind of deepened his understanding of it's not how many, you know,
right.
are there,
yeah.
that it all matters. So I agree. I think it's depressing, and I know people are trying to make gas money, and so I always try to buy some T-shirts or whatever if I can to help them out, especially at shows like that. But
mm-hmm.
But it does matter, you know. It does make a difference.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And what would you say one of your greatest rewards in terms of, you know, looking back on the years you've had the label now?
You know, I think certainly we're known for some of our most commercially successful bands, but there's definitely been things that we've achieved with people who maybe are far lesser known or whose commercial success wasn't as great, but to be able to get the record and complete their artistic vision, execute, I should say, their artistic vision exactly as they wanted to, is really great. I really admire the saxophonist Fred Anderson. He's a big inspiration to me, and he'd never overdubbed before, and he'd never recorded in a studio, and being able to have him have those experiences in the way that he wanted to do it with Hameed was really great. And in return, I got probably one of the best lessons and understandings of how him and Hameed Drake think about improvisation, and that it's a language, and that it's a learned language, and just the depth of understanding they gave me is you know, far greater than anything I ever was able to do for them. So,
wow.
I think, you know, it's things like that are really the payday, or someone you work for turns you on to some record that you think, I probably wouldn't have stumbled on this otherwise, and that opens up a whole new window to like a segment of music that I hadn't stumbled upon before, and one of those records might become one of your, you know, go-to always spin records. So those are the kind of things I think are really the payoff. You know, we're not making a lot of money. That's not the point. I mean, mm-hmm. the point is to make a lot of money for our bands, but it doesn't always work out the way you want it to. So.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, how long, I know you're in this is the 20th anniversary. How long did you work alone on the label before actually hiring help?
I worked alone for, I think, probably four years, and then people started helping me, and then I started paying someone probably 5 years into it, and I probably started paying myself eight years into it.
Wow.
I bartended for a long time, you know. Booze is good for money.
It is.
So that
ever thought of changing the name of the label to, like, Booze Jockey or anything?
Yeah.
Like that?
I'm a straight edger, but yeah. Fueled by booze.
Oh, you've got to give credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
Awesome. Hey, we have a question from one of the listeners. They want to know what the first record you bought as a youngster was.
Yeah, well, let's see. The first records I acquired, I have to say, were inherited or stolen. I got, like, some swing records from my father, like Glenn Miller and stuff, like, you know, Pennsylvania 6500, and mm-hmm. I love those records. And a record by a band, I can't remember what the band name was, but the song was called You're So Ugly, and it was like a real kind of traditional jazz song. And then I stole some records from my sister, like the Contortions, which was really a big awakening for me to realize you can really be a geek. And I think that opened a huge amount of doors for me.
Mm-hmm.
But the first record I think I bought was, I think, Styx, a Styx record.
Wow.
I don't know. It's hard for me to tell. I got a Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, which I think I got. I think I asked for my birthday. And then I'm pretty sure I bought a Styx record. Maybe I bought Foreigner, You're As Cold As Ice 7-inch. That could be it. It's something really classic rocky and unimpressive.
Excellent. Well, thank you for not hiding the truth.
Oh, you know, I still like that song, so it's a good song.
Awesome. And, well, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day, because I know you are juggling a million things over there in Chicago. Is there anything that you want the listeners to know about you or about the label?
I mean, sure, there's lots that I want them to know about all the bands we work for. I think hopefully they will take the hard work that everybody here does and be inspired to do it themselves. I mean, that's the thing. It's a lot of hard work. You really gotta be willing to put that in, but the rewards are, you know, huge. And I feel like myself and all the people that work here, and a huge amount of interns. We couldn't do anything without the interns. I should have interns on stage at every show, because the interns really... I started as an intern for a Hoboken label called Telstar Records. And
oh, wow,
put out
yeah.
the Mummies, and interns really make the world go round. So we should all... Everybody should raise their glass of whatever to an intern.
Cool. Awesome. Well, and I want to just thank you, because, one, you know, it is a lot of hard work, and now that you just... told us that that you didn't pay yourself for 8 years. That's pretty remarkable. But thanks for being so open-minded enough to really create the unique label that Thrill Jockey is, and taking the initiative, because you know, we all benefit, luckily.
Well, I hope so.
yeah, absolutely. So we've got the New York shows are at Death by Audio next Friday. That's White Hills, Guardian Alien, Raiton, Man Forever, and Dan Friel. And Saturday at Webster Hall, the early show, Tortoise, Future Islands, Matmos, Liturgy, D. Charles Spear, and the Helix.
And then wandering around the Black Twig Pickers.
Right, yeah. So what are the next couple things we're going to hear in your final set here?
We're going to hear something from Brother JT. I love myself some Brother. We're going to be lucky enough to be putting out a Brother JT record well into next year. But this is something from a CDR that you probably can buy from his website, called Any Stort in a Porm. And the song is called I Still Like Cassettes. And there's many people in this office that very much love the cassette.
Mm-hmm.
Even the micro cassette. So, and they'll be happy that I said micro cassette on the air. But the song, I think, reveals his imagination and his wit and his social commentary, and how he's not afraid to let his freak flag fly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, since I know you like the rock, we'll end it with some heavy, with the Kralis.
Yeah.
I love the Kralis, and I love that I have 4-year-old twins, a boy and a girl, and my son, Francis, he loves Kralis, and his father is in the singer of the Sea and Cake, and he likes to tell his dad that he would rather hear Kralis.
Really?
Really. So we'll have a little boat driver from Kralis.
That's awesome. We don't know what's...
For Francis.
What the state of the family is going to be following that. But,
we used to have fun teasing his father, asking him, you know, doing a battle of the bands, the Sea and Cake versus, to see which one Francis would pick.
Those are the games you get to play at home.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yes. How you dishearten your dad.
So
he is a big Sea and Cake fan, so I should say that.
Okay. Well, you know, and so he's just becoming very open-minded like you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Bettina, thank you very much for visiting with us, and congratulations on the 20th anniversary. And, you know, your passion for music just comes through so much. I could tell that you could talk about music for hours, and I know you're really busy.
Yep. Both are true. That's how I get myself into trouble. But we're going to pile in the van and head out there, so hopefully we'll run into you at one of the shows.
Absolutely. That's so great. So we have next Brother JT, my guest, until the end of the next song, is Bettina from Thrill Jockey Records. Stay tuned.
Hello.
Hi. That was awesome. Is that okay for you?
That is where I still like cassettes. They are by far my favorite format. And these digital days, there's no time
And that wraps it up for today's podcast. Thank you to Lita Martinez for editing the podcast and to Liz Berg for all the other background work. We are WFMU.